G'day, I'm Erk, and welcome to episode number 2 of Erk FM Extra, the show that gets behind the scenes of what it's like to be a independent and or unsigned musician. For our second interview, we have a person who's currently on the line. You may have heard him before on Erk FM and also on Blast from the Past and Judy's Blast FM. Hello to Tony Dean. Hi, Tony.
Hello, Erk. How are you?
I'm doing good, mate. How are you?
Pretty good. Not too shabby.
That's pretty cool. So, tell people a little bit about yourself who haven't heard of Tony Dean before. How would you describe you and your music?
Me and my music. Okay, well, first of all, so Tony Dean, I've been playing music for a very, very long time, and kind of my drums is the main instrument that I play. Also, I studied drums for a long period of time, and up until about a few years ago, I started to really get heavily into kind of guitar and singing. So I started writing songs and just learning a whole bunch of covers and really just trying to sing and get better at guitar, because it's something that I've, you know, always wanted to do but just really haven't put in the time. I was too busy playing drums. So yeah, a few years ago, I kind of just started, you know, playing guitar and writing songs, and my songwriting style has kind of it's still evolving. It's kind of very young in the sense that I haven't written like a million songs yet, you know. But what I have written, it's kind of indie pop with a kind of happy kind of. I want it to be catchy and write catchy songs that everyone can relate to. So. Yeah.
And of course, we'll talk about all that and a bit more during this interview. Now, you've actually got an EP out as well, and so we'll hear a couple of songs from your EP.
Fantastic.
Now, of course, we should talk about the way that I found you in the first place.
Yeah.
If the name sounds a bit familiar, yourself and Emma are related, of course, Emma Dean.
Yes, we certainly are.
And through her I met you, and also through Franz Arp I met you as well.
Yeah, that's right. We have been kind of known each other for, well, I've known Emma for a very long time.
Obviously.
But Ben kind of came on the scene, and about end of 2007 I started to meet Ben, and of course Emma and Ben were dating, and we moved into a house together in 2008, and yeah, so we lived together for a very long time, and then after we ended the lease there, we moved back into my parents' place for about 5 or 6 months, and then they, of course, moved to Sydney. So yeah, we've known all been together for a very long period of time, and it's kind of been really, really nice because we have a really collaborative approach to our music. So, you know, living three musicians living in the same house together, we would, you know, Ben being the sound engineer and recording producer and, you know, awesome musician that he is, would, you know, help us record our tracks, and we'd all play in each other's kind of, you know, records and songs and stuff. I'd do the drums for them. So, yeah, it's a really cool relationship that we have.
Now, of course, we've had Emma on the show before, and we've had Franz on the show before. Emma was episode 150 of Erk FM. And Franz was, just looking at my list, Franz was episode 190.
Yes.
So this sort of fills the triangle, so to speak, of the two people that you've just spoken of.
Yes, definitely.
So if you want to know a bit more about the other people who Tony has just mentioned, you can listen to those interviews as well. There's links on erkfm.com for that. So what was it like from your point of view, growing up? Was your family a really musical family? Did you want to be a musician when you were younger?
No, I definitely did not want to be a musician when I was younger. But very musical family. We started on music at a very early age, like around probably 3 years old or something. Like, there was this school of music called Stoliarski School of Music, and that was kind of like teaching fundamentals to young kids, music theory and recorder and, you know, singing and all that kind of stuff, basically through games. So we started that really early, both me and Emma. And then around the age of like 5 or 6, we started violin lessons. So mum and dad were, you know, wanted us to, not be musicians, but they wanted music to be in our lives because Dad was a huge music lover, classical music, you know, blasting through the stereo every weekend. So, we very musical family, but I actually kind of really disliked the violin. I really disliked music early on, even though it was kind of something that I was, I had a kind of ear for it, but I was much more interested in just playing soccer and playing sports, a very sporty kind of kid. And I just wanted to be out running around, and I didn't want to be in a room practicing, you know, practicing violin scales and all that. So I disliked it quite a bit and focused on the soccer instead.
So you've not focused on the music, so to speak. You've wanted to, you know, be outside and run around and all of that sort of stuff.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So that, I mean, this was when I was kind of pretty young. It all, the tables turned when I went to high school. Primary school, I was learning violin and a bit of piano as well. And then kind of towards the end of primary school, I stopped learning. I said, enough's enough, Mum and Dad, I don't want to learn anymore. Much to their, you know, disgust, they wanted me to keep on learning, but I just wanted to play soccer. And then when I went to high school, they really wanted me to continue, you know, some kind of musical study. And I think they noticed that I was tapping or something. Or I used to tap a lot, or they thought I had some natural rhythm, so they encouraged me to start percussion. So I, in about year eight, I think it was like about halfway through year eight, I started the percussion program, so it was a bit late. But, I kind of took to it pretty easily because I had a whole bunch of other musical experience from primary school, you know, playing in the string sections and all that. So I started the percussion lessons in year eight of high school and then got into the band very quickly. And it wasn't until I think maybe year nine music camp when I saw the high school big band. And the high school big band had an amazing drummer called Dominic Heed. He's actually still drumming in some bands like Cooey and Kafka and Bobby Flynn. He was the drummer for that ex-Australian Idol performer. And I saw him play in the jazz stage band. I was just like amazed. It was just the most, from that point on, I just was just like, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to be the stage band drummer for the Kelvin Grove, you know, high school. So at that point, I asked my parents, can I get lessons? And they were really pleased with that because, I'm talking about private lessons because I really didn't want to take any private drum lessons because I was a bit anti-music lessons because I didn't really like them too much when I was in primary school learning the violin and piano. So I decided to, ask Mum and Dad to if I could take some drum lessons because I really wanted to become good. And then from that point, it kind of like the tables turned and sport kind of, you know, took a back seat and music was pretty much number one from that point.
So tell me about, you probably remember your first time on the drums. What was that like? I know I did it recently.
First time on the drums, it probably would have been, Emma was actually in a band when she was in like maybe year nine or something, like early high school, a band with two other of her girlfriends called Halo. And that was kind of like a, you know, pop bands, bass, piano and drums. And, you know, every now and then they'd get together and rehearse. And I remember one time they brought a drum kit. They're rehearsing at Mum and Dad's place. And, you know, I would have been in year seven or something at the time. And I just hopped on the drums. I was like, I can have a go. And that was probably the first time. And yeah, I pretty much sucked. And it was a lot of fun though. And I really liked it. And maybe that kind of sparked the initial rhythmic drive, I don't know, but that was the first time I got on them. And then I can't really remember the next time, probably when I started learning percussion in year eight, I guess. Maybe mucked around in the drum kit in between lessons or something.
Well, I know when I first had a go on the drums, you can hear it at the end of episode 174 we've sent it.
Oh, yeah.
The drummer from Send Itself, Alan, he had his drum kit out because we're in the studio, And I asked him after the interview, oh, dude, can I have a go? And he's like, sure, no problem. And so I had a go, and I'm sure your aim was probably the same, just to make as much noise as possible.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, the first time you step on a drums, it's like, you don't really know what to do. Like, you don't know the kind of what hand does what leg does what. So you kind of do end up just making a bit of noise and having fun, which is pretty cool. It's not cool to be in a room with a bunch of kids though that just first discover the drum set. Not fun at all. You know, I recommend wearing earplugs for that one.
So tell me, I've often wondered this particular sort of question. When it comes to knowing what to play when you're a drummer, if you're a guitarist, for instance, you'll have the music or the guitar tabs or whatever, so you know what to play when.
Yeah.
How does the drummer know what to play when? How do they do that?
Well, it kind of depends on what kind of style you're playing. It depends on if you're in a, like, original kind of bands, like, for instance, Emma's band. So I've been playing with Emma since 2005 in the Emma Dean bands. And, for instance, like, a group like that where it's Emma's written the song, you know, and it's her original music, and then she'll bring the song into the band, and we'll just kind of, like, she'll play it once, and then we'll kind of just, you know, get an idea and a feel for it, and then I'll just make up a part, or just play along to it, and we'll do that a couple of times, and then this workshop, it pretty much, I like to ask questions, like, you know, hey, does this sound good, does that work, and get some input from the other band members. But that's the kind of original music style. But if you're in a band, like a stage band or jazz band, you know, there is charts that you follow. So you're kind of following a basic outline of the song, not so much exact, like, this is, you've got to play this exact. For drums, it's not really like that. It's not like you've got to play this melody exactly how it's written. Basically, there's a sheet of music, and it has, you know, bars noted out, and the kind of basic form of the song. It might have some hits, but you're not really, you kind of, it's open to a lot of artistic interpretation. So you follow the, you know, the basic gist of the outline of the song, and just do the hits where it's written, and that's basically it. A lot of it's just, listening to a lot of music. So if you're playing jazz, you know, okay, well, you're going to play a swing beat. So you know, you play the initial swing beat, and that's kind of very oral interpretation of kind of like making up a part. Yeah.
I noticed with some of the bands that I follow, mainly heavy rock and heavy metal and that sort of stuff, I've noticed that a lot of those bands tend to be pretty heavy on the cymbals. Is that something that you do, or is that something you avoid?
I'm kind of, it depends what band I'm playing on. I'm playing with, sorry. Like, I was in a band called the Royal Artillery for a few years, and for that was kind of like a heavy rock, Queens of the Stone Age, kind of Jimi Hendrix vibe, very loud, extremely, you know, hard hitting. So when I was in that, you know, rock band, I was hitting the cymbals very hard, you know, and it just kind of depends on what style, music, style you're performing with, and especially it changes with each room you're performing with as well. Well, I think it should anyway, my personal opinion. I don't think you should just go, you know, turn the amps up to 11 every single room you're in. You got to kind of play to the room. If it's a smaller room, you can't play as loud. And if you're playing loud, then it's going to be a sound guy's, like, nightmare to mix you. So you got to kind of ease back on the cymbals a bit. So when I'm playing with, say, you know, Emma, I'm, depending on what room it is, you know, I'll try to hit, you know, be loud, but I won't kind of crash out on the cymbals as much as, like, a rock band's would in the same kind of room, because, I mean, you know, rock is very loud kind of music, you know, gets a heart pumping, and that's its kind of idea. But you've got to kind of listen to what kind of music you're playing and what style it is. So for Emma, it's very, you know, piano driven and intricate parts. So if I'm just, you know, wailing on the cymbals, it's just not gonna, it's not gonna complement her playing all the song either, and it's gonna probably sound like mud out the front.
I've noticed seeing a particular drummer who was with an acoustic band compared to a metal band, you sort of really have to hold yourself back because you know what you're capable of. Is that something, like, if you're drumming for Emma, you know, you have to hold yourself back a lot more than, say, if you were doing something with Franz, for instance?
No, not... do you mean hold back in terms of volume or hold back in terms of, like, drum feels or, like, kind of that kind of thing?
Yeah, you just have to hold back. You don't like, bash it at 11 just for the sake of it. But
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, you definitely... holding back... there's not really a sense of really holding back when I'm playing with Franz or Emma, because it's, I mean, it's not like I'm playing like in a jazz trio where it's very kind of soft. But I don't think it's ever good to kind of feel like you're holding back, you know? So I tend to, I'll play, but I just won't play as loud, but try not to be holding back anything. Try to give it as much power and intensity, but just at a lower volume, if that kind of makes sense. But I never feel like I'm holding back playing with Emerald Franz at all.
So let's sort of continue the conversation where you were talking about your first time on your drums and your first band. What happened from there?
First time on the drums, like you're about year 7, started the percussion in year 8. Year 9, I think I started drum lessons and I was still in the percussion. And then in year 10, stage band drummer had left school. He'd graduated, so it was time for auditions. And I auditioned and I got into the stage band. So that was, a goal that I set and I achieved that, which I was really, really happy with. I was really stoked. And then I started playing the stage band and, that was a eye-opening experience. That was... it was very, very tough for the first month or so because having not played drums for that long and not really know how to read a chart, like reading charts, you know, it's pretty difficult if you haven't done it before. It's kind of like, you know, getting thrown in the ring of fire. So I think there was a time where the band director might have thought about kind of cutting me and putting another drummer in, but around about that time I started to really get the hang of it and really enjoyed it. So all through year 10, year 11, 12, really focused on the drums and then I decided I wanted to, be a musician kind of like in year 12. I was still kind of tossing it up, but year 12 I was like, that's my life. That's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be a musician. I'm going to be a drummer. I'm going to travel the world, have lots of fun and be a famous musician. So, but I decided to... audition for the Conservatorium of Music because my sister had she was at the Conservatorium at the time and I knew a lot of people and I love jazz. It was pretty much the only music that I would play and listen to, so I thought this would be perfect. So I auditioned for the Conservatorium and I got into one of the prep programs. So for the next like 4 years I was studying Bachelor of Music at the Conservatorium of Music, majoring jazz drums, and getting a lot of playing under the belt, you know, a lot of practice, a lot of gigs, so tons of different styles, you know, rock, pop, jazz, Latin styles, lots of stuff. And it was during that kind of period of time that I started playing in Emma's band, which was really, really fun. And I started playing in a lot of original music bands. And... I'm not sure I don't think it was like a defining point, but as the years kind of passed by when I was at the Conservatory of Music, I kind of felt like original music was where I really wanted to focus. So I'd kind of done a bit of a 360 change. Like I wanted to be a jazz drummer when I went to the Conservatory of Music. That was what I really wanted to do. And that's pretty much my whole experience playing drums, you know, playing in the stage band at high school, and that was what I really loved. And then somehow I think maybe just getting opened up to a lot of different music styles and a lot of different groups, I really just fell in love with the process of original music and creating that with, you know, friends and bandmates and creating something, yeah, original. And that was what I really, really liked. And it's kind of like around that period of time, well, those four years, I started, you know, delving into guitaring and singing to an extent, but and, you know, writing songs. But I always, I was never really a good singer. Like, singing really, really held me back. Whenever I sung, I was, you know, I couldn't sing for very long, or it just hurt me. You know, I was singing with bad technique. I'd go for like maybe like month long times where I'd kind of like be, oh, really into singing, and then that little phase would stop, and I wouldn't sing for like, you know, 6 more months, and so it was kind of like very, I didn't have a lot of confidence as a guitarist or a singer. But, you know, over the years, I just kind of kept on fiddling with the guitar and kind of singing. And, it wasn't till I left the con, graduated in 2006. And in 2007, I started, you know, doing a lot of gigs around the place, drumming-wise. And it wasn't till the end of 2007 when I started, I think I learned a couple of songs. Blackbird by the Beatles was one. And forget what the other one was, but I learned a couple of covers, and I think I played them for some friends, and I played them for mum and dad, and I don't know, it just kind of came together, and I was like, oh, okay, well, this is kind of cool. I can kind of sing now, and it just like something opened up, and I was getting a bit more confident as a singer. And that was right at the end of 2007. And then, of course, we moved into a house with Ben and Emma in 2008. And that was when I really started practicing a lot. And I had the goal of just, I wanted to be, you know, a songwriter. And I wanted to be a drummer as well. But I just really started focusing on, you know, writing songs and learning covers and just doing a lot of singing and playing. And, over the years, that's kind of led me to my current situation, where I'm basically not doing a lot of drumming and doing a lot of singing and guitaring and a lot of playing.
So what is it like being in a house full of musicians? Does that help you or hinder you, do you think?
I think it definitely helps. Like, it was a very I've spent about a few years probably living with musicians. So a couple of years, 2008, 2009, living with Ben and Emma. And then last year I moved in with into a house in Woolloongabba with a house full of musicians. And one of them I was actually in a band with called Safety Dance, which was kind of like jazz, original kind of gypsy band, very hard to describe. But both, you know, experiences has been really enriching, I think, because there's just so much music going on. There's a lot of collaborating as well. So when I was living with Ben and Emma, I was you know, playing a lot for their shows, and then we're doing a lot of recording sessions. So I was getting a lot of experience in the studio, especially living with Ben, because being the, you know, recording engineer and producer, he you know, opened my eyes to a lot of recording drums. I got a lot of experience playing with him behind the control panel, you know, mixing and recording the drums, which was really great. And, it's just been a really good experience living with musicians, because there's always music happening. You can't really run away from it. There's a lot of collaborating. There's a lot of kind of ideas getting chucked here and there. And, you learn a lot. And, I learned a lot about singing just from listening to my sister teach her vocals when I was living with her. And even though I haven't, you know, had too many lessons myself, but just having, you know, hearing her do the exercises, I was kind of like, okay, well, I'll do those exercises too. And it's been a really good experience.
Was there ever a time where you thought, no, I don't want to do this anymore?
There's been lots and lots of times where you just kind of want to chuck in the towel, or just like, what am I doing? Or just, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not getting any better. I'm just, you know, full of a lot of negativity, because it's very, in original music especially, there's not a lot of money. It's a lot of, hard work, and just a lot of work to get, you know, your music together and to get it to a quality that you're happy with and that, you know, you're happy to put it to record and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of been little things here and there to been like, oh, you know, what if I just stopped music and became like an, I don't know, an engineer or a doctor, but then actually, no, I've never actually thought of that because I'm definitely not smart enough for that. That's far beyond my capabilities or my interest. So it's kind of, you know, you have these little fleeting ideas of, okay, what would happen if I did this, or, you know, but then you realize like there is nothing else there for me anyway. There is nothing else. It's not kind of like I really want to do music. It's just kind of, which, you know, I really do want to do music, but it's kind of like I have to do music because it's just, you know, what I've fallen into, and I think it's the thing that I do best in this world and the thing that I love doing the most. So there hasn't been any real serious you know, thoughts of doing something else.
How would you compare the music scenes in Sydney compared to, say, Brisbane?
I think, yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think they both have their strengths. Like, I love the Brisbane music scene. I probably, I've been way more involved in the Brisbane music scene, done a ton more gigs there, and I know a lot of more musicians because I've, you know, been living there my whole life. And I think the music scene there, it's kind of like, a lot of people say, oh, no, it's not going anywhere. But I think there's some really good venues that are, you know, popping up and some really great bands, and, you know, a lot of great bands have come out of Brisbane, which is really fantastic. So I think they're kind of, Sydney is, there's a lot more music happening, a lot more musicians, you know, a lot more venues. So there's always something to go out and see. Brisbane, for me, maybe it's because I've just been living there for a lot longer. It seems more like a close-knit family or something, or it may be just the people that I've been hanging out with in Brisbane. Sydney is just very big and vast, and there's just so much going on. It's, yeah.
How would you compare, for instance, being in the studio compared to being playing live? How do they compare for you?
Basically, when you're in a studio, you've got to play everything a lot more, you know, perfectly. There's not a lot of room for mistakes because what you're playing is going to be, you know, immortalized on record. So definitely got to play a lot more kind of cleaner. But at the same time, you need that same live vibe to make the song, you know, sounds organic and good, and, you know, sound like something you want to hear. Sometimes if you can get in a headspace in this studio where you're thinking about, oh, playing too perfect, or you're just not playing naturally. And that's something that, you know, you've got to learn from being in the studio. Like, it took me a while to learn that, just to kind of play like I'm playing live, but slightly different. When I'm playing live, I'm kind of putting a bit more body movements into it and a bit more kind of showmanship like that. Not that I'm like twirling sticks over my head and stuff, but I'm kind of, you know, trying to vibe with the crowd and create a bit of energy. Because, you know, when you're playing live, there's a whole visual factor. So you gotta make it look good, and you gotta make it look like you're enjoying yourself. But when you're in the studio, you've gotta make it sound like you're enjoying yourself and sound like it has as much energy when you're playing live. Except when you're live, you know, a little mistake, people aren't really gonna pick up or dwell on it too much. So when you're in the studio, you've gotta kind of keep that same live vibe going, but you just got to play a bit more perfectly or clean, if that makes sense.
Do you find yourself sometimes when you're singing or playing the guitar, do you find yourself doing one more than the other? Like, you might get caught up in the moment and you might do something a bit special on the guitar. Oh, hang on, I'm supposed to be singing too.
Yeah, with me, I'm not really improvising kind of guitarist. I'm trying to get into that, so that's something that I really want to do, and I've been, you know, going through the blues scales and, you know, listening to that kind of stuff, and this having a lot of fun kind of trying to figure that out. But mainly when I'm playing guitar, I play certain parts, you know, so the parts are pretty much there, the chords are there anyway. I might do some, different rhythms or different pickings, but for me, when I'm singing and playing guitar, there's not a lot of room for improvisation. So there's not, I'm not like a Jeff Buckley or Jimi Hendrix where they're kind of singing and at the same time they're doing the improvisation. So I kind of have my parts set out there right for me. And so I'm never kind of in that headspace. With drums though, I'm doing, sometimes I'll be at a gig and I'll be playing and I'll do some fill and I was like, where the hell did that come from? That was really cool. But it's just in the moment. And I find it a lot more easier to improvise with drums because you don't need to, know the scales or, it doesn't need to be a particular melody that you're playing. It's just rhythmic improvisation is a lot more easy, in my opinion.
As a drummer, what do you think of bands who don't have a drummer?
It's totally fine, I currently don't have a drummer, so when I play, I'm just a solo performer, so I really like some acoustic stuff, a couple of guitars and, voices and maybe some strings in there, or, it doesn't need to have drums to be great music, and, a lot of string music that I like, a lot of just, piano music. A lot of vocal music, it doesn't have to have drums to be, complete. But I do dig drums, bands with drums though. It does give a certain aspect of what's the word? I don't know, propulsion, or it's excitement. That you can't get if you don't have drums, but it's horses for courses.
What about a band who uses a computer to be the drummer, like a drum machine?
That's kind of cool. I listen to a lot of kind of hip hop acts, and they just have a DJ playing the loop. And it's already been recorded. There's no live drummer. They might, do some scratches here and there, do some changes. But, basically, there's no live drums there, and that's totally fine. There's definitely organic elements that comes to a live set of drums, which you can't get from, a computer. And also that same kind of live vibe that a drummer brings to it. I probably wouldn't want to pay a lot of money just to see a computer drummer, or just like a computer doing all the drumming on stage, or just a really rigid kind of beat. Luckily these days, hip hop producers and stuff, they'll tap in the drum beat on their little keyboard or whatever, so it kind of has an organic feel to it anyway. It's not just a kind of straight computer drummer. I think that would be kind of boring.
Now, you said earlier that your songwriting is relatively young. What inspires you?
So my songwriting, everything inspires me. And basically, my kind of songwriting style, I take in a lot of influences, both fiction and non-fiction. So I don't kind of feel like every single song has to be totally 100%. This is exactly how it happened. This is exactly how it went down. I kind of... will feel inspired to kind of take little bits from here and there of my life and just, put it into a song. But the most kind of important thing for me behind my songwriting is kind of the emotion. I'll kind of start by, maybe creating the melody or the chords or whatever, and just kind of, how is that making me feel? Is that making me feel happy? Is it making me feel sad or whatever? And then from there, I find that the emotion kind of spurs on the lyrics, and then I might, take little bits from my life here and there that I'll put into it. Some songs are totally 100%, this is something that happened and I'm going to write about it. I don't have any strict rules.
So let's imagine for a second it's 3:00 in the morning and you're asleep and you have a really good idea for a song. What does Tony Dean do?
Oh, that has happened to me so many times. Sometimes I sleep through it, depending on how lazy I am. But a lot of the time, this has happened a few times actually, where I've woken up and I've had the best song in my head, like, you know, I've dreamt this song and it's perfect. It's like, you know, that song by Tenacious D, you know, tribute to the greatest song in the world.
Oh, I love that song.
The tribute, yeah, it's an amazing song, but you know, it's just like, this is just a tribute to the song. You know, it's not the greatest song in the world. This is a tribute. I kind of feel like when I wake up and I've had this amazing song in my head. It's just, I've been singing. I know all the lyrics. I know all the melody. I'm playing it. It's perfect. And I think it's like the best song ever. And then I wake up, and then kind of in the first minute, I might kind of lose. I can't remember all of it. And then I pick up a guitar and I try to make the song happen, and it just doesn't sound the same, and it kind of changes. But that has happened so many times where I've woken up and I've just pretty much written a song in my sleep, and then I will write the song in real life, and it usually doesn't sound like it did in my sleep, but basically the general gist of the idea is there. And so if I, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll wake up, I'll be like, oh, that's such a great song. And then I'll grab my phone, or I'll grab, like, my camera has a mic in it, so I'll grab my camera and then I'll kind of just, like, hum into it. You know, whatever, like, in my half-asleep state, and, you know, thinking that this is the most brilliant thing in the world. And, you know, I might pick up a guitar right then and there and try to figure it out. But usually I just kind of, like, you know, hum the melody, hum the basic gist of it, maybe do a little drum beat into the phone and sing some lyrics, and then I'll sleep on it, and then wake up and realize that it was just a complete shit what I just recorded then, and kind of feel sorry for myself. But sometimes it does work out. Sometimes, you know, a few of my songs I have written, and big, you know, segments, or maybe the whole thing has been written, you know, in my sleep.
So let's talk about your EP that you've just released. How was that process for you?
So it was kind of a pretty long process. I didn't really, when I started the project, I didn't really expect it to turn out the way it did. So at the time, I think the first session that I ever recorded for this EP, so I released, you know, a couple of months ago, you know, September 2011, I think I started recording the drums the end of 2008, maybe, or it could have been, sometime in 2009. It's been, you know, more than 2 years anyway since I first laid down the first drum track. And what we're doing at the time, we were, like I said, living in the household with Franz and Emma. We were kind of, well, they were making records themselves, so Emma at the time was creating songs for her album, which became Dr. Dream, and Franz, I think, was creating the album, which was his Angry Birds. And we were just doing little sessions at a time, and I'd be, you know, tracking drums for them. And so I was doing, you know, playing a lot of drums on their albums. And while we were doing this whole process, you know, number of sessions, I think Franz said, oh, you know, while you're here, you know, how about we record some of your songs? And so I started, you know, okay, well, you know, I've got these songs, I'll play the drums. And so maybe before or after their session, I recorded the drum tracks to my song. And I think, you know, well, you know, only two sessions that we did, two songs each session. And we kind of like sat on those drum tracks for ages and ages. I didn't do anything until maybe like a year later, and then we started recording some vocals back at my mum and dad's place, started recording some vocals and guitars and just adding little bits here and there. So I think my songs like Whole Day and what was the other one, Lift Me Up, they were recorded, you know, a couple of years ago or something. And then the previous the other songs, the Thin Ice and I Got Nothing, recorded at the end of last year. So kind of, yeah, big spaces in between everything. And because I wasn't kind of trying to produce it for a timeline. I didn't have a specific point in time where I needed to release it or do an EP launch. It was just kind of like little bits here and there, you know, just kind of like chilling out and cruising and just, yeah, it was a really cool way to do it, I think, and just a very relaxed process. And then, you know, this year has been I think mixing. I think that's all we've done this year. Just like sat in it for ages. Like, you know, a couple of months would go by and I haven't really done anything. Then I'd be like, hey Ben, you know, Franz, I can let's start mixing, or let's do this. And so we'd do a little session. Then he'd send the MP3s back over their email, and I'd go, yeah, this is cool. Let's you know, do this or do that. And it just kind of a very slow process. But at the start of the when I was first originally recording the drum tracks, I never expected it to turn into this EP, or, you know, think that it would be exactly the way it was. I was just kind of, I didn't really have any idea. I was just like, okay, I'll just record some drums, and yeah, not really thinking about anything really.
So can you tell the difference between the tracks that you recorded early and the tracks you recorded later?
I definitely can. Like vocally wise, I think they have a specific sound. I think the Thin Ice and I Got Nothing, my voice changed a bit. I think maybe it's it sounds a bit different. I know that I definitely got better vocally from the original vocal tracks to the later vocal tracks. And Thin Ice for me, kind of very hard vocal part. It took me a long time to kind of get that down, even though, you know, I don't know why I write a song that I can't sing, but I pretty much wrote a song that I couldn't sing because it's very high and it's kind of right in the break between, you know, the chest voice and the head voice. So doing the falsetto and kind of going down into the chest voice, I couldn't do it. So if I had recorded that one a year before, I don't think it would have sounded as good as it did. And probably if I recorded it now, it would sound, you know, even better, I hope. But yeah, there's definitely been a evolution of kind of getting better with the vocals. And then, that's the main thing that I pick up is the vocals. I can't really remember when I recorded all the drums and the guitars, how far apart they were. I think it's all pretty similar in that regard.
So when it comes down to it, when you've actually got the EP in your hand, everything's done, you've got the little CD in your hand, what were you thinking?
I was thinking, oh, I wish I had changed the graphic design a little bit. Because, it was kind of like, it was the first time me kind of designing something like an EP or just doing any kind of graphic design, apart from designing my website, you know, visual kind of graphic design, I haven't had a lot of experience with. So it was a very, you know, steep learning curve on how to actually do that, you know, how to create an EP and get all the fonts right and get the layout right and pick the right photos and all that kind of stuff. So I remember like picking it up and I was like, oh, this looks really cool, but damn it, why didn't I just do that? Why didn't I, you know, just not exactly how I want it, but then I guess like it never is. Like, you know, even songs aren't exactly how you want them, you know, live performances aren't exactly how you want them. But I remember holding the EP and I was just like, wow, it feels really good to actually finally have this. And I was definitely very proud of having it all put together. And it's not only like, you know, a couple of months worth of, you know, work. It's kind of, you know, it's a couple of years or a few years. And it, you know, since the time that I started in 2007, you know, seriously getting into getting better at guitaring and singing and songwriting to the point where I just released the EP, it's kind of like that whole period of time into this EP. So I was, you know, pretty proud of that, you know, despite the fact that I wanted to change some things.
So why don't we let people hear a track off the EP now? What is Thin Ice about?
Okay, Thin Ice is about, basically, if you've ever been in a relationship with someone or just had a, you know, argument with someone or just a close friend or anyone in particular where you're just kind of like skating on thin ice around them. It's like just about to break. It's just a lot of tension there and you just don't know when the ground that you're skating on or walking on, you know, is about to break. And that was kind of like the thin ice, skating on thin ice thing, you know, don't know when it's about to crack. And yeah.
So here is Thin Ice by the man we're listening to now, Tony Dean, on IrkFM Extra number 2.
I got a lot of things I want to tell you. You got a lot of things you want to say to me. There's a lot of unspoken tension. There's a lot of hiding things we often share. Can't you see? We're both tiptoeing on thin ice. Who will crack first? When I'm not with you, I feel lighter. When you're not with me, there's nothing to hold you back. We used to hate now, being together. Being together now's a ticking on the time bomb clock. Can't you see? We're both tiptoeing on thin ice. Who will crack first? And this is what I wanna say. Hey, 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 baby, you're driving me crazy. I know, I know, I know, I know, I know that baby can feel the same way too. So what are we going to do? I don't want it to end like this. So many memories, so many good times, and now they're fading just like the sun at dusk. And we're unraveling the love between us. We're talking about it, good forgetting why we're even here. Can't you see? We're both tiptoeing on thin ice. Who will crack first? And this is what I want to. Hey, 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 baby, you're driving me crazy. I know, I know, I know, I know, I know that baby can feel the same way too. So what are we going to do? 'Cause I don't want it to end like this, end like this, end like this. Before we crack, before we crack. Hey, 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 baby, you're driving me crazy. I know, I know, I know, I know, I know that baby, you feel the same way too. So what are we going to do? 'Cause I don't want it to end like this, end like this, end like this. So what are we going to do? 'Cause I don't want it to end like this, end like this, end like this. Hey, 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 baby, you're driving me crazy. I know, I know, I know, I know, I know that baby can feel the same way too. So what are we going to do? 'Cause I don't want it to end like this. Like this, and like this, and like this.
So you've produced the EP, and not only were you producing the EP and also appearing on Emma's album and Franz's album, but you're also touring around as well during that time as well.
Yeah, kind of like little tours here and there. Doing little tours with Emma and, well, basically, Emma has been my big touring kind of band, doing shows in Melbourne and Sydney and in Brisbane and Toowoomba, and I haven't yet to do a show in Adelaide or Perth. Emma usually does those solo, but yeah, it's kind of little tours here and there, which has been really fun. I would love to be on the road like all the time and just, you know, and perform night after night. I think that would be so much fun, because every time I go on a tour, I have so much fun and I don't want it to end. Then to come back home and it's like, oh, okay, back to real life, you know. So, I definitely like to do more of that.
Because I remember the first time that I actually saw you, you were drumming for Emma in the Surgical Scrubs for the Dr. Dream Tour in Sydney.
Yes, the show at the basement.
No, this was at, oh, I can't remember the name of the venue now, but...
different one. Was that, I can't remember the name of the venue either. I think it's changed now.
It's closed, yeah.
That was at the end of last year. That was a really, really fun tour with that one. Getting to be the doctor of the show, dressing up in the scrubs, and it's always fun to get in character when you're on stage and you can have a bit of fun with it and, you know, be someone you wouldn't usually be on stage. And definitely a character like that doctor with I had my hair kind of like spiked way up and eye makeup on and, you know, these doctor scrubs. I was a very eccentric doctor. It was a lot of fun, and it always is a lot of fun playing with Emma.
Did that open up a sort of, I could get into a bit of acting, a bit of musical theatre maybe? Did that open that up?
No, it hasn't. You know, I'd love to get into acting in musical theatre. I would, you know, maybe somewhere down the track. The first time I actually saw Wicked, I was on tour with Emma in Melbourne. And Wicked was just at Melbourne at that point in time. And we actually won the Wicked Lottery, which is like you get there early in the morning, sign your name up for these tickets, and you get them for really cheap. I think we paid maybe like $30 a ticket for front row seats for the Wicked musical. And after I saw that, I was just like, oh, why didn't you start earlier? Why didn't you start musical theatre and singing? And, you know, you could have done that because I was so blown away by it and I thought it was such an amazing production. I was like, I would love to do that. I would love to, you know, be able to dance and be able to sing and perform in musical theatre. But then I thought, well, you know, I didn't even like music when I was young. It's not the way it all turned out. And, you know, being tall and gangly, I'm not the best dancer. And it's always kind of like a dream that I have. You know, maybe I could just be an actor or be a musical theatre performance, but... You know, it all comes down to a lot of hard work. Like, you know, I know pretty much nothing about acting apart from taking drama in high school and you know, doing the odd little thing, you know, performing on stage. I think it's very different to acting, and that would be a whole process of learning another thing. You know, it's been so hard learning how to play guitar and singing. I think it would definitely be a challenge to act, but something that I'd love to do, you know, later down the track, but something that I'm not exactly motivated to start at the moment, unless someone just was like, oh, you're really good at playing music, here, do this movie for me, which, you know, will never happen, but that would be lovely if it did.
So if current day Tony could go back in time and talk to previous Tony, like maybe high school or something like that, with the benefit of your experience, what advice would you give yourself?
What advice would I give myself? At that point in time, I don't think I could have done anything else. I think I was, you know, like I said, like when I was singing in high school, I couldn't really sing. Like I was in pain when I was singing. I thought I was bad and I had no range whatsoever. I was a pretty, you know, poor singer. Like I had the voice somewhere in there, but it wasn't very developed. So back then, if I had have said, okay, you know, Tony, start writing songs and just, you know, forget about the drums, just become a songwriter and play your guitar and sing and start practicing that. Well, you know, I don't think that would have worked because at that point in my life, it just, you know, wasn't the way it was going to work. So probably I would just say, you know, follow your heart, follow your intuition, and, you know, work hard and try to stay away from bad influences, young Tony. You know, stay away from the drugs, stay away from the alcohol and the booze and the rock and roll, and put your, you know, head in the books and study. And actually, I probably wouldn't have said that, but yeah, I don't know.
What about if you had to give some advice to someone just coming into the industry? What would you say to them?
Just coming in, at what level would they be coming in?
Like, someone just thinking about starting, they might be in a young band, for instance.
Yeah, well, I'd kind of, I'd tell them to just practice a lot, you know, listen to a lot of music, and just, yeah, do a lot of practice and kind of, depending on what they wanted to do, if they had a really good idea of what they wanted to do, like this is the type of music and the style that I, you know, they wanted to do, then I'd say, okay, just really focus on that. Really focus on that and, you know, listen to other stuff and allow that kind of influences to come in. But just, you've got to, there's reaches a point in time where you can't be master of all trades. You know, you have to kind of focus on one thing. So, you know, I learnt a lot of styles in drumming and you can, you know, I was thinking about that. Well, you know, maybe I could become a session musician. Well, maybe I could become a session drummer and be a jack of all trades, you know, do that kind of thing. But, you know, I really wanted to just focus on, you know, singing, songwriting, playing guitar and writing songs in a kind of, you know, pop, indie pop kind of genre. So I think there's so much influences at this point in time. And, you know, we've got YouTube, we've got, you know, thousands of records, you know, people downloading heaps of songs in lots of different styles. There's a tendency to kind of go, okay, I don't know what the hell to do. Like, there's just so much out there, you know, and trying their hand at, you know, this and that. But really, you will only kind of become really good at something when you just fully focus on it. And I'm not saying don't, you know, expand your horizons. Like, for instance, I'm really into opera, and this last year I've been kind of, I went to my first opera, which was La Boheme at the Sydney Opera House, and I've been really trying to sing opera because I think that, you know, it helped my vocal technique. And that's something that has been a bit of a sidetrack for me, I must admit, and I was going against my advice, but it has helped me. So, but you've just got to keep your eye on the prize, keep your eye on what you want to do, and really kind of, yeah, focus in on one thing or a little niche that you follow and put all your heart and soul into that and really push that would probably be the advice that I give. And also just really, yeah, it's going to be a lot of hard work and it's probably going to feel like giving up at times. But, you know, don't do it and probably don't get into this career if you want to have money. Because until you get to a certain level, that's probably going to be quite difficult. In the original scene to make good money and, you know, live a kind of extravagant lifestyle.
Speaking of not having a lot of money, yep. Yourself and Franz went out and were doing some busking, he was telling me.
Yeah, we went out on Saturday night to George Street, just kind of across the road from Event Cinemas in Sydney. I tend to go there, you know, try to get there every weekend. Busking is my chief source of income. I do the occasional gig here and there on drums. I play in a cover band with Franz as well, a little cover duo where I play some congas and some drums. But busking is, you know, the chief source of my income. So it's not, you know, amazing income, but it's, you know, doing something that I love. And, you know, it's amazing that you can actually make a living from playing music on the streets, you know, a lot of the time, and it's a lot of, you know, really good experience. And that time on last Saturday, the busking with Franz was really fun. Every single Friday and Saturday night when you go out and you play for the people going clubbing, it's a really crazy night. And, you know, very colourful, interesting stories every night. Yeah, pretty fun.
And one interesting story, which we should probably tone down a little bit, was... A particular Spanish couple took a liking to his guitar case.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct. A Spanish couple, they were very into our music. They were, like, you know, loving it. And the girl especially was quite drunk. And she was having a great time dancing all over the place and, you know, grabbing the mic off us, much to our disgust. But also, I don't know how it happened. I think she just maybe... you know, decided that she thought the guitar case looked good and, you know, it was going to be on for the, you know, her and the guitar case. So she lay herself down in the guitar case and started kind of writhing around and on top of all the money. And then her boyfriend got there on top of her and they started, you know, making out and having a good time. It was kind of, it was a bit, R-rated. But yeah, it's you've always got to be careful when people jump in your guitar cases too, because I've had a dancing couple in front of me actually fall over. They fell over into my guitar case and broke it. And, you know, beyond repair, it takes about a minute for me to close my guitar case now. So you got to be careful for those people, grinding in your guitar case. Be very wary of those Spanish couples.
So it's either a very big guitar case or a very small Spanish couple.
Well, yeah, well, she was kind of, you know, petite size, but it is quite a big guitar case. Definitely enough room for a little Spanish girl, for sure.
You must meet some interesting people out there.
Yeah, very interesting people, very interesting people. Especially, yeah, like I said, the Friday and Saturday nights. I've, you know, witnessed many fights happen out in front of me. Just after a girl gave me some money once, she gave me a donation, and then out of nowhere, this other girl just started arguing with her, and then the next second later, they're having a cat fight, and one of them had a Slurpee in their hand, and the Slurpee went all over me and my guitar case. And then next thing, I was like, I was taking off my guitar because I was like, going to break this up. I was just about to like step in, and then these cops just came in and tackled them. And then there was, you know, a sea of cops around, you know, trying to break up this fight. And then, yeah, all pandemonium breaking loose. But yeah, lots of interesting people, and lots of drunk people thinking that they can sing when they really can't, or thinking that they can play guitar. You know, I tend to kind of, you know, let them have a go every now and then, depending on, you know, how much money they give me and how, you know, how friendly they are. But every now and then you get a really great singer. And I think that Saturday night with Franz, a lady called, what was her name? Anya Nissen or something like that. She's a young girl. I think she's only like 16 years old. I don't know what she was doing out, but she got up on the mic. She, you know, asked if she could sing a song, and her friend was like, "Oh, you know, you got to let this girl sing. She'll like give you so much money." And we're like, "Okay, well, what song are we gonna sing?" And we're trying to like, you know, going through what we all knew, and I was like, "Okay, well, do you know that song by Rihanna called We Found Love? I just did a cover of it." So it was kind of fresh in my memory, and just like, oh yeah, you know, I kind of know it. It's, you know, number one in the charts at the moment. So I think she, you know, kind of had a vague idea of how it went, and she started singing. It was like amazing, like really beautiful voice, and you could tell that she could really sing and had an incredible range. So I was like, okay, well, you know, I should get your Facebook contact and just keep in contact. So I checked out her Facebook, and it turns out, yeah, she was on like the High School Spectacular, I think, and, you know, been on TV quite a number of times, and, you know, I think she definitely has a big future. You see, you meet some really good people, and, you know, you meet some drunk people that kind of just make you laugh and you know, try to get on your instrument and play, but it's all good fun.
Have you ever seen any people who have seen you busk and then they'll actually come to your gig, or they'll connect with you on Facebook or whatever?
Yeah, definitely. I've had a few, not as many people as I think the problem with you know, busking out at night time, you know, are they kind of drunk and they're in a party mood, that they're not going to really remember your name. Something I got to really do is get like a business card or something and just or write it down for them. And even then, for, you know, maybe every 10 people that you tell your name, or like, you know, write down your name, maybe a couple will add you, you know, so, or, you know, get in contact with you. But I've had you know, quite a few people get in contact saying they'd like to play with me, and like the you know, bring out a bass or something and start jamming. And yeah, it's a really good way to connect with people and just put your face out there. And you never know, you know, when someone important might, you know, be listening to you. I know a couple of stories of people that have been busking, you know, Pitt Street Mall, for example, and, you know, got a record contract or manager out of it. So it's, it can be kind of rewarding. The people you connect with, I connected with one artist one time I was busking, and he did these kind of cartoon sketches of me, a couple of cartoon sketches, which was just like absolutely amazing. And he gave them as a donation. Didn't give me any money, but he gave me this really fantastic artwork, which you can see on my Facebook, I think. But yeah, you get really positive feedback sometimes. A lot of negative feedback as well. But yeah, that's just the way it goes.
But then again, for every busker who is talented like yourself, or like Franz, or like some of the other people you've spoken about, I dare say that even you'd see some people who you think, you know, it's good that you're giving it a try, but, you know, you shouldn't really be asking for money.
Yeah, well, it's whether you can, you know, make a living out of busking or not, I think you have to have some kind of, you know, talent. So, you know, I do see some people busking out there that, you know, they might have just started guitar, or might have, you know, they're not, you know, an incredibly accomplished musician, but at the same time, you know, you got to start somewhere. And I think busking is just such a great way to hone your craft, because you're playing in front of people, and practice in front of, you know, performing in front of people is just the best way to get better and gain confidence with songs. And so many things can jump up out of nowhere when you're busking. So, it's a you know, great experience to, you know, deal with all kind of interruptions and stuff, and, you know, see if you can continue the song. But for someone that, you know, maybe had just started, but they're not the best busker, you know, good on them, and you know, keep on going, and, you know, you probably, you know, get some pocket money and stuff. But yeah, I kind of tend to give my money to buskers that I, you know, really feel like doing something special, and, or just, you know, I might just like the song. And I think a lot of the times people give money to people that they're very familiar with the song, you know, they'll just be like, oh, I love that song, you know, here's a couple of bucks.
Is there a particular song that you'd get asked about to do more often than not?
Yeah, I think the number one song ever, for pretty much any type of gig that I've done, jazz gig, pop gig, rock gig, any kind of covers gig, you know, people always ask for K-San. They love K-San, you know, a bit of Cold Chisel, and I still haven't learned it, but it's one of the lists that I'm, you know, really planning on learning, because so many people, I just got asked today, actually, a guy came up, and he was just like, oh, you know K-San? And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry, I don't. And he's just like, oh, whatever, and just walked away. But, you know, it's just, if you know the songs that they come up and ask you, you know, that's a good chance to get some more money. But K-San would probably be the number one song that people ask me, and I still don't know it. Ben actually knows it. Actually knows it, and it went down pretty well last Saturday night, I must say.
Another one which I tend to hear a lot around is Wonderwall by Oasis.
Yeah, Wonderwall, yeah, definitely. That's something that they always ask, and something that I'm yet to learn. My repertoire is, I have some, you know, a few songs that go down pretty well. Like, I find Tears in Heaven is a really good one, depending on what kind of mood it is. You don't want to play Tears in Heaven if people are in a really party mood. Well, sometimes it works, but I remember one time I was busking in the morning, and it was about 7 o'clock in the morning at a train station, and I was playing Tears in Heaven, and this little old lady came up to me, and she was like, oh, what are you playing that song for? You know, it's the start of the day. You want to brighten people's day, you know, not play a sad song like that. And she was just absolutely disgusted, and she walked off, and I was just like, yeah, she's got a point. But, yeah, Tears in Heaven is a great one. No Woman, No Cry is pretty good. But, yeah, it's kind of... doesn't have to particularly be a song that people know. It might just be, you know, a song that sounds good, tend to works. So I kind of, play a wide variety of things, because you never know, you know, who's out there listening. You know, someone might really like folk music, so play a folk song, and they will give you money, and they'll enjoy it. So, yeah, you never know.
Do you play your own stuff?
Yeah, I play my own stuff as well. And it works just as well, you know. Pretty funny, when people have this, like, a few times, I'll be playing my own song, and people will be walk by, and they'll be singing along, but they won't be singing along. They'll be, like, kind of, like, trying to sing along, but, I mean, it's my song. They don't know the song, you know. No one, my voice, my songs I've been, you know, have it on radio or anything, so they try to sing this song, and I just laugh at them, because they've kind of got this puzzled look on their face, like, I'm kind of singing, but I don't know the lyrics, but I'm singing anyway, and I'm just like, what are you doing? But yeah, no, this you know, your original songs go Yeah, just as good.
So why don't we hear one of your original songs to finish off? Tell us about Whole Day.
Whole Day. Okay, so Whole Day is a happy song about spending the whole day with the person that you love, and yeah, getting up to all kinds of fun stuff. And it's just a little catchy song that I wrote, and yeah, hope you like it.
Wake up early in the morning. Look over and see your face and it's shining. You and me, just you and me. We got the whole day to ourselves. To ourselves. Caffeine for breakfast gets our juices jumping. A bike ride through Parkside, now our hearts are pumping. And me, just you and me, we got the whole day to ourselves. To ourselves. Whole day to ourselves. 24 hours for us to share. Let's indulge like a king and a queen. We'll build a castle and call it our dream. Oh, dream. Oh, dream. After we have lunch, let's go see a movie. Something to laugh at, something a bit stupid. You and me, just you and me. We got the whole day to ourselves. Nighttime is fun time and dinner is special. We could go salsa dancing, there's so much potential. You and me, just you and me. We got the whole day to ourselves. Whole day to ourselves. 24 hours for us to share. Let's indulge like a king and a queen. We'll build a castle and call it our dream. We'll build a castle and call it our dream. We'll build a castle and call it our dream. We'll build a castle and call it our dream. We'll call it our dream. Oh, dream. Wake up early in the morning. Look over and see your face and it's shining. You and me, just you and me. We got the whole day to ourselves. Whole day to ourselves. 24 hours for us to share. Let's indulge like a king and a queen. We'll build a castle and call it our dream. All day to ourselves. 24 hours for us to share. Let's indulge like a king and a queen. We'll build a castle and call it our dream.
So to finish up, what's on your agenda? What's coming up for Tony Dean?
Yeah, coming up for Tony Dean. Well, first of all, I'm going to continue busking to pay off certain debts that I've accrued from producing this EP. So I need to get my butt into gear and start making a lot of money. And also, I'm going to Woodford. I'm going to be playing drums in a band at Woodford for a magician. I'm not quite sure exactly what's happening there, but that will be fun. And I'm just really trying to push my EP at the moment, trying to get the name out there, always trying to get better, and always trying to write new songs and that kind of stuff. So yeah, hopefully good things in the future for Tony Dean, hopefully.
Awesome.
Maybe, yeah, some more Spanish couples grinding in cases, I'm sure will be in the future.
Now I hope they gave you and Fron some decent coin for doing that.
Yeah, they did. They gave some pretty good coin. You know, I must admit, they weren't skipping on us. So, you know, all respect to them for that. And you know, made us have a bit of a chuckle. So that's something else that they gave us. So not all bad.
What's the weirdest thing that you can think of that someone's thrown in your guitar case?
Maybe in my guitar case. I can't think. Not, I haven't got too many weird things. What are they called? The origami. Someone tucked a little origami thing in it. I don't even know what it was. Maybe a stalk or something. But the weirdest thing that has ever happened, it wasn't like kind of chucking something in my case. It was more chucking something in my mouth. I was singing a song, and I was really getting into the song, and you know, just really feeling it, you know. And I had my eyes closed, and I was you know, feeling the vibe of it. And all of a sudden, I just felt this thing in my mouth, and I opened my eyes up, and this guy's just chucked a cigarette in my mouth.
Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah, and I was just like, dude, you know, what's going on here? And he's like, it was his offer. He was like, you know, here, take the cigarette. You know, this is my payment for you, kind of thing. But, you know, a bit kind of... it broke the vibe of the song a little bit. I must admit, I did stop singing, and kind of, what the hell just happened? But I had to tell him, unfortunately, you know, I don't smoke. But I gave it to my friend. My friend was the star standing right next to me, so I gave it to him, and he enjoyed it.
Wow. So Tony, why don't you tell us where we can find you on the interweb if we want to say hi?
Sure. Okay. To find me on the interweb, tonydean.net is my webpage, and from that site you can. There's links to Facebook. There's links to my YouTube account. You know, Triple J and Earth. Lots of things. So if you remember tonydean.net, would be the best idea. Or just type in Tony Dean into Google, and that should bring up quite a few things as well.
I was going to say, you might want to be careful about that, because you don't know what you might bring up.
Well, that's true. Well, you know, I think for our Australian listeners, I don't know exactly how the Google works, if it's different in different countries, but I typed in my name the other day, and it came up with, I think my website was first click, but there's also another Tony Dean. There's tonydean.com, and tonydean.com is like an outdoors site or something, like an outdoors store that sells, I don't know, outdoor equipment. The Tony Dean, I think he's actually passed away, because there's a big banner on the site that says, you know, Tony Dean, so-and-so born to so-and-so year, died, and he's holding a big shotgun or something, which is kind of a bit humorous. But, yeah, don't go to tonydean.com. Tonydean.net is where you want to go.
Awesome, Tony. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely, Eric. Thanks for having me.
So there we have Tony Dean. Don't forget to look him up on the interweb, tonydean.net, not .com. You know,
yep.
Unless you want to get some outdoor supplies, who knows?
Yeah.
And we will see you next time somewhere across Channel Irk. Good night,
yes,
interweb.
Yes, definitely. Good night, Irk.